It's time for Blindly Obvious.
Hello and welcome to Blindly Obvious. I'm Tyler, as always, with my co-host Jeff. And today we have a special guest, Ty Matthews, who is running for House of Representative in the 83rd District of Ohio. Ty, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And first and foremost, I guess, maybe you could give the audience kind of a background of, you know, who you are, where you're from, and why you're doing this in the first place.
Yeah, so who I am. I grew up here in Hancock County, just south of Findlay in a small town called Arlington. And if you want to get a little more specific, further south, if you know where Billtown's at, I grew out in the, all right, they're on the county line and out in the country. So that's where I grew up and graduated from Arlington. I'm a proud Red Devil. After high school, I went to Cedarville University, which is a small Christian college near Dayton, Ohio. That's where I got my first degree, and most recently just got my master's degree in executive leadership from Liberty University.
Oh, very nice.
Yep. And during that time, after college, I went on to work at the state treasurer's office, first as a special assistant to the treasurer, and then on to work in his policy shop. Simultaneously, during that time, I worked and served in the military. So the last 9 years, I've served in the Ohio Army National Guard, first as a chaplain assistant when I enlisted, and then when I commissioned as an infantry officer through Central State University, which, interesting enough, it's a historically black university, the home of the Buffalo Soldiers. So
nice.
That's kind of my military lineage there. Most recently, got back from a deployment this past August from Iraq, where I operated as a battle captain.
Really? Very cool. So now how much time did you spend in Iraq?
I would say getting really specific, 7.5 months. They pulled me out of the country early to go down to Kuwait and start teaching a new course for soldiers entering combatant theaters called Green Sands. Green Sands really focuses on this new threat, emerging threat of drone warfare. During that time in Iraq, I developed a subject matter expertise on countering this. It's called CUAS, Counter Unmanned Aerial Systems. So that's kind of where I developed a subject matter expertise. They pulled me out of the country early so I could help train the next soldiers coming in and develop Army doctrine to address this new threat.
Okay, so this is something obviously then kind of close to your heart as far as, obviously all of us, I think, have experienced drones here in our country at some point, right? Whether you own one or they're flying overhead seemingly constantly, but you've kind of gotten a more inside track of a look at how these things really operate and the potential dangers they may present if in the wrong hands.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And I won't get into too many specifics since this is being, you know, broadcasted, but I think when I hint at things, it's going to be pretty clear of what I'm talking about. And I think a lot of people are growing more concerned with this emerging technology, such as, you know, AI and incorporating that with drone technology. That being said, a lot of this, you know, when I look at it, it's not just these extremely heinous acts of, you know, potential payloads, right? It's
sure.
Also smuggling. You know, there's already talks in these prisons of contraband getting dropped through these drones. Also through, you know, privacy. Right now, looking out the window, it's very easily a drone could be sitting right outside there with a camera that is better than any of our phones,
sure,
looking right in at us and recording us, right? So there's some concern there with not just privacy, safety, and also with the smuggling of contraband. And I'm not trying to say we have to regulate these things out. I'm saying we should look at ways that local law enforcement can properly address this issue. And it's not through shooting these things down like some people think. There's other ways through electronic warfare that we can empower local municipalities to address this.
This is our current laws. They just don't address the sky. Who owns the sky? And we're told, well, you think you own the sky right above your house, but you don't.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, so,
and people that are buying these, they are not informed of the laws that are currently on the books, you know, and one of them being is, right, we're sitting here. Who truly owns the sky above this, right? It's, can I fly a drone? Can I hover right over you? Can,
sure,
I just fly right over? You know, what's kind of the standard there? You, as a homeowner, how comfortable are you with Ty Matthews flying a aircraft over your house that has a camera?
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot of stuff we need to start talking about. But also, like I said, there's a lot of promise to this. You know, farmers are now utilizing this for surveying, you know, spraying fields. I believe there are, our law enforcement can also use this to help.
Well, they do, right? They do.
They do,
at present.
They do, and I think that's a way we should look at, you know, further funding, you know, these law enforcement officers, you know, with, you know, whether it's, you know, searching for a criminal out in the field. I think not too far from here, was it 2 years ago, there was a fugitive on the run that they were looking for in the woods, and you know, they're searching through cornfields. Is throw one of these drones up and
with a FLIR on it, and they can see them.
Sure,
can see
them.
Yeah. And human lives aren't at risk at that point, right? So I think,
but it's amazing. And what you're saying is there's tremendous opportunity. Unfortunately, because the laws aren't clear, it also is opportunity for criminals, not just for law enforcement or even the private citizen using it in appropriate ways.
That's correct, and I think we need to be proactive rather than reactive on this, right? And one of the issues that I see contributing to this, and don't think I'm an alarmist, but you look at the southern...
That's Jeff.
Well, you look at the southern border right now, and it's just a free-for-all, and we know that not everyone crossing is, you know, the traditional migrant that we're used to. We're seeing people cross over from Iran, from China, and these are the countries that are leading the fight right now against our soldiers with this technology. That is my concern.
Sure.
You know, is having a couple of these, you know, migrants, it only takes a couple of them that know how to use this technology. And the technology is so easy to use.
Right. There does seem to be a lot of fighting-aged men coming in with all of these women and children seeking refuge. So I think you're right. Very interesting as for, you know, what's going on down there?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the ability to utilize this technology without any ability to counter it is what really is concerning to me, because it just takes one of us, just one of us with these drones to really cause mass chaos in these cities. And again, you know, people are like, oh, you're being an alarmist. Well, I'd rather be an alarmist and try to find a solution to this in case it does happen rather than having the worst possible case scenario. Because I'm telling you, you just have to look at what's going on in Russia right now to see what these things are capable of.
Dropping grenades.
I kind of think just in general, maybe the average person considers something they're not aware of or they think could never happen as, oh, that's just sensational or, you know, alarming, until then it happens. And then it was, why did nobody do anything?
And I know this is, it's a little bit of a different story over there, but I mean, if you've ever traveled to Israel, that was a very, very secure country. You look what happened last, I believe it was last October, with the attacks that happened. One of the ways that Hamas was able to carry out these attacks was with this technology I'm talking about right now. The Israeli military is very, very, we know they're great. But you look at how surprised they were, you know, with how ready they are.
Sure.
And they were just caught off guard. And, you know, that's what I see here is we can't get complacent. There are people out there that are evil and they want to cause you and I evil because not just of our beliefs, but our way of life.
I think, I mean, you could even give a more local to home example here of, I think people probably viewed the United States as pretty sound and secure until September 11th of 2001. And then all of a sudden it was a different story.
Well, our whole society is built on the premise that we're good Americans who are law abiding, who love each other, care about each other. We once were a Christian nation with values and principles, morals that for the most part, 99% of people live by.
Yeah. I would still say that's
99?
Mostly true today.
99%?
Maybe not 99, but I do think most people are, though, they do abide by morality and they are decent people and they don't want to harm others.
Yeah. So I was talking to a voter actually earlier today about this, right? Is one of the, I think, the cornerstone of my campaign, maybe, that I actually talk about my foundation, right? You know, my foundation is my faith, you know, and I think we need to start asking elected officials. Not even elected officials, we need to start asking people what their foundation is, right? Because think generally, specifically Hancock County, Hardin County, and Logan County, the district I'm running for, we generally share a lot of the same values. And whether you're a Christian or not, you don't realize you are benefiting from our Judeo-Christian values that are so just absorbed in this community, right?
So, 100%.
And I think where we're seeing this starting to falter is people don't understand that and this is my core belief, for you to have a consistent stance on anything, you have to have a foundation, you have to have a worldview. And many times we aren't asking these elected officials, what is your worldview? Where are you getting this from? And you know, when they don't talk about their worldview and their foundation, immediately a red flag goes up, you know, in my mind, because it's so, if you don't have anything you're really basing this on, you are essentially just telling us what you think you want us to hear. And that's what we're seeing, I believe, in the Republican Party is a lot of quote-unquote conservatives, quote-unquote even Christians mm-hmm. that use that to get elected. And at the end of the day, they just know, I'm trying to get elected in Findlay, Ohio. Let's look at the demographic. There's a lot of Protestants here. Yep. You know,
what do you need to hear for me to get your vote?
Right.
So exactly. Whatever the wind is what they're going to do, right? No rudder, just whatever is popular that gets me.
Yeah, and in that moment, I'm telling you, in that moment, they may even be insincere. But once they get pushed at all in Columbus, they falter because right. they do not have that foundation. And that's mm-hmm. why I think we are getting so... And listen, my worldview is that all men are fallen. I'm not a perfect human being up here. We all make mistakes, and we continue mm-hmm. will. You know, hopefully we don't make these mistakes, but we continually will.
Yep.
But when you don't have that foundation,
you're nothing
swayed.
To return to.
Yeah, exactly. And you go to Columbus,
you're going to be swayed by someone. You're going to be swayed. It's called a dollar.
Exactly. Right, that's exactly.
You are in my head right now. I wrote this down because I want to make sure I get all of it in my little soapbox, and I want to give you a chance to respond. This is my opinion, but we live in what I would say is an increasingly predatory system, and I'll be specific in that. The infringement on our liberties, from free speech and censorship to our Second Amendment rights being threatened, the right to be left alone, which is basically guaranteed in the Fourth Amendment, taxation that is completely out of control, the weaponization of government programs and systems, the IRS, the ATF, the FDA, the AMA, the FBI, the CIA, the Patriot Act, the weaponization of food even, and the stuff that's in it from the chemicals, medicine, technology, and then every few years we get new people who touch on some of these things and make incredible promises that sound like you just talked about. I'll do this and I care about this and whatever those issues are, and I'm going to make change occur that we all want to see. And then when it comes to actually putting their foot to the pavement, when they're in office, it falls apart.
Yeah.
How are you different? You know, you're coming in, and I know that you can't deal with all of these issues, but there will be some things in your circumference of control and sphere of influence. Why will you be different? You know, there's been many in your position you're applying for who've made a lot of promises. We won't name names.
But big on promise, short on delivery.
Absolutely. Right. So why are you different?
Yeah, I think one, and it's kind of, I'm going through a transition right now where I'm being called a politician. I never have right. in my life, right? And I'm willing to say, you need to be skeptical of what I'm saying. We all need to be more skeptical of what politicians are saying. That's the first step is, right, try to be honest, try to be transparent. But, you know, kind of getting down into all of that you just said, I heard this recently, and I thought this was extremely interesting on how someone voted for policy. They said, if the policy increases responsibility in society, I'm typically for it. If the policy decreases responsibility in society, I'm typically against it. You know, and you look at where we are at a country, I think that kind of sums it up. When, you know, as human beings, we work really hard so that we can retire one day. Or, you know, finding ways that we can make our lives easier, right? Which is a good thing. We utilize the technology we just talked about to make our lives easier. Mm-hmm. We have unfortunately allowed that to seep into government, where now we have created not just safety nets through social welfare programs, but we've created a lifestyle. And I think you bring in people, you know, we sit around a table here. If you had someone from every political spectrum sitting with us, typically we'd all say we want to make people's lives easier, mm-hmm. right? I think that's probably a common thing was government should facilitate a good life for people. Unfortunately, that's been hijacked. And I think they've used a lot of our values against us even, right? Oh, are you opposed to helping someone out that's in need? Well, of course not. You know, that's a tenet of my faith that I will, you know, I will try to help the poor. Mm-hmm. But now we're trying to push that into government, and now we've created this lifestyle. We've created policy that has gone to the point of lessening everyone's responsibility in society right now. And when you see that, I think it creates this culture of just, why does it matter?
So it almost goes from being something that we could do to becoming something that we should do, or it's a right now, right? It's,
yeah, it's, look at this, I guess, the evolution of this. You know, I was very blessed to go to Cedarville Liberty University, which really teaches a Christian worldview on how this country was founded, right? We talked a lot in college about the Protestant work ethic. That is completely missing from any type of education system I see today, right? We don't talk about worth ethic anymore. We talk about the social welfare programs. You know, we talk about government spending. We talk about bringing grant money back to our communities, which, listen, I'm for grant money, but that grant money is our tax. That's our money. You know, so why is it leaving in the first place? How about we look at cutting taxes across the board so the money returns to your pocket? Because I believe you know how to spend your money the way you want to spend it, and that's the free market principle.
And you're not going to have a tiddly bit of a say of how that grant money is used when it does come back to your community.
Right. In the free market, you know, it's got a great way of rewarding people on merit and hard work. And unfortunately, we see people that aren't willing to do that, and they struggle. And then we kind of overcompensate now with that. And that's where I believe we are passing laws that are granting less responsibility to people. And I think this is kind of I think we just have to look around in our community and we're seeing this happen, right? And we're very blessed to live in Findlay. You know, the 83rd District, we have a lot of great, hardworking people here. And I hate to see it, but the government spending we're seeing is making that difficult, right? We see the inflation driving up costs. And, you know, a lot of this inflation, I think you can link it back to the COVID ARPA dollars where, you know, we're trying to bail out, we're printing dollars, we're giving people stimulus checks, right? Well, what does that do? That takes responsibility off the person, right?
Sure. And it also takes away incentive.
Exactly.
Or ambition.
I love your focus back to we the people, not just in regard to our liberty, but our responsibility. And, you know, when it goes back to the government, you know, I've said this before in the past, but, you know, charity is no longer charity when it becomes required. And that's kind of where we are, is that it's become an expectation that you have to do this or we'll just come take it anyway.
Yeah.
Open your wallet.
Ty, I think you just gave a very great description of we have kind of, I think, traded responsibility for convenience. And that convenience is what's been hijacked by, you know, just as we just discussed about drones. A drone's just a drone. It's just who seizes the opportunity to use it and what they use it for. Convenience is simply convenience. It can be used for good. It can be used for bad. And there can be people on both sides of it who are trying to make things more genuinely convenient, but still in a good society. And there are people who can take advantage of convenience and at the same time put you in positions that, you know, most people have no interest in being in.
Every time you take a benefit from the government, there's also an asterisk, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have a say in how you spend that. They have a say on how, you know, talking about private schools, how what you teach, right? And I know one of the schools I went to, Pensacola Christian College, they were very hesitant in taking any government money because they didn't want the government telling them, "Oh, you can't speak on this."
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's such a wide con. I mean, we could sit here all day talking about, you know, what you just said, you know, trading it for convenience, you know, talking about the government with, you know, funding different, you know, schools and what does that mean, the caveats. And, you know, to me, it's just this surging just growth of government that I think the Republican Party is even kind of moving toward.
Yep.
You know, and they're utilizing it to their benefit. Elected officials can say, "Hey, I brought all this money back to you." I'm looking at it like, well, that's my money in the first place. Why did it leave, right?
Well, even if they're not knowingly and willingly partaking, which I do believe, I agree with you, some are, the rest of them who sit back and do nothing are playing a part in it happening due to their complacency.
Mm-hmm. Thomas Sowell is one of my favorite authors and economists. He is great, and I recommend everyone.
He's brilliant.
He is. I recommend this book, Discrimination and Disparities. It goes in the kind of the numbers of this, right? And I'm going to maybe butcher this, but how he described it is if there's an individual that is in the lowest income bracket and he's actively working, he will climb out of that. Every single time, he will climb out of that. But the way the left wants to show this picture is they break it up into groups. You know, they, obviously, people are making more and more money as you know, businesses grow. But you're never going to make less than zero, you know? So what they show is, oh, the poor are getting poorer and the rich are getting richer. That's what they want to say. But they don't look at the individual within those brackets, right? If you look at individual movements of people that are actually working, they're constantly climbing up. you know, but they just want to look at this bracket where the poor are getting poorer, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we're progressing in society. I mean, there's, we can talk about, you know, as an, at the individual level, if it's, is it ethical to be a trillionaire, you know, a billionaire? That's a whole nother conversation. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm saying when you look at the data, it's just simply not true. If someone is responsible, if someone is working hard, they are not staying in that low income bracket. They are working their way out of it.
I think I would agree with you in that sense, and also maybe offer a little pushback in the fact that I think maybe with saying people are getting poorer is fair, and the fact that I don't think it's a bracket issue. I think it's the three class system of upper, middle, and lower class are becoming so far apart because of the unlimited free money printing. I mean, inflation is crazy. And these people at the higher end of the spectrum are obviously feeling that less because they have more dollars, to where then the people in the middle and lower class are getting poorer because it's costing them more for essential goods.
Yeah, right. And that's, again, I don't think that's the free market causing that issue. I think it's the government spending that's causing that, right?
Yes.
And that's what Thomas Sowell would go back to, is we keep trying to solve this issue through the government. And right, the government does have a place, right? I understand that. I'm not a libertarian to the extent where I'd get the government completely out of everything. I do believe the government has a role in society. I really do.
And a small role,
exactly, right? A small role. I think a lot of these issues that we're talking about right now, why are we printing off all these dollars, right? It's constant spending. And, you know, we can even dive into who puts out, do you guys know who puts out that, I think it's like the Festivus spending, where maybe it's Rand Paul, where he shows the most ridiculous things the government has funded
crazy projects, yeah.
Right? It's like lobsters on a treadmill, right? It's why, you know, why are we subsidizing things like
this? There's a grant for it. I mean, it's got to be spent, right? Because otherwise, it's lost money,
right? Yeah. I mean,
that's what they say.
It's an endless pot, right? It's an endless pot. So,
yep, I completely agree with that. What would be a time in which you would say maybe in your life you found yourself in a real crossroads of a situation, and maybe, you know, faith seems like a big concept and principle for you, that you really had to lean into that to carry yourself to the other side?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I believe that was, it's currently happening right now. So when I got back from Iraq, I had a couple job offers that, you know, it was more money than I thought I'd ever make in my life, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there, you know, do I go work for these companies or do I run for office? And that was a major crossroad because you're looking at running against an incumbent.
Sure.
And that is not an easy thing to do.
Well, and let's be fair, taking a cushy job for a company is also going to be a lot easier for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Your life's going to be a lot easier.
Yeah, yeah. And listen, I think this is one of the issues we have in our nation right now. And I don't want to curve your question here, but running for elective office now is not looked upon as an honorable thing, really. And I look at the campaign I'm currently running and seeing what I'm being attacked with. Mm-hmm. I don't know why anyone would want to do this. I completely understand why you would say the cream of the crop of society that we want to be running for office, why they're not doing it is they can go over, they could probably make money or just live a life that they're not going to get attacked on and lies made up about them.
Sure.
Right? And I knew that going into this, and that's why it was a crossroads. And I sat there and I thought about it. Like, if I'm the man who I think I am, right?
Yeah.
I would take this leap of faith and I would serve, in my eyes, the way I would serve God and glorify God is through this, you know, making a stand. My logo, if you see my logo, it has three stars, and that's God, country, and family. And that's what I live my life by. I'm sitting there thinking, if I truly live my life by this, who cares about the money?
Sure.
There's something a lot bigger at stake here.
That's awesome.
And that is the crossroads where I had to really lean on my faith to really show me the path forward. Because listen, even if I lose March 19th, I believe God had, I really do believe I'm down a path God wants me to go down. And whether that's ushering in someone else coming up, whether that's setting something else up in my future, I really do see a benefit, not just policy-wise or in politics of, you know, my campaign, but I'm seeing a lot of people now talking about faith again, you know, and that's something I really wanted to be a marquee of my campaign is.
So you kind of reinstilled that confidence in others who have always felt that way, but been kind of silenced in terms of, I feel like this world can oftentimes make us feel like nobody else thinks the way we do because there's certain narratives that hold the megaphone, when in reality, lots of people feel like you do.
They want to marginalize us, and it's there's more of us than you think.
Exactly, and one of the biggest compliments I get is like, thank you for talking about your faith. You're not ashamed of it. I'm like, wow, that's kind of crazy hearing this in Findlay, Ohio, right?
Yeah.
A lot of us here share the same faith. And I will say this. Listen, I'm not even saying you have to even be a Christian. I've got a lot of people that, you know, I would say that we don't align with each other ideologically when it comes to the faith.
Mm-hmm.
But they are supporting me because they find it extremely refreshing. Someone is talking about themselves. They're trying to act in integrity. They're trying to be transparent, right?
And that's being something upfront.
Right.
Just be upfront.
And it's something that they haven't seen in so long that it's refreshing to them. And that's exactly what I'm proud of, right? I am a strong conservative Christian, but I'm also supposed to reflect Christ in my life.
Sure.
So I really do hope people that are to the left of me look at me, and in a way they respect me because I'm standing for what I believe in. I'm transparent. What I say is actually what I mean. And I'm not just here playing games just to say, oh, I know you're a little moderate, so I'm going to say, these are my beliefs and try to line them up with yours. No, I'm going to stand my ground.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to respect you. We're going to return to dialogue. And even though we disagree at the end of the day, I will still respect you and I will not raise my voice and I will not berate you for your view. I am not just representing myself. I'm representing my faith and my God.
I think, as you said, that these people who may not align with you in terms of faith align with you because they are so fed up with the tireless system that they've come to know as politics that, like you said, it's refreshing. And I do align with you in faith, but I totally understand where people would be coming from in that aspect. And I also, I mean, I know one of the first times you and I talked, I told you it's not the quote-unquote Democrat Party that bothers me, because most of them are open and out front about what they are and what they want. It's the people who claim to be on your team who then sit on their hands or passively, you know, they played for the enemy the whole time, but you thought they were your friend. Those are the people that bother me.
Yeah.
There's also the other ones, though. The ones, they're not sitting on their hands, or hands are out for the bribe.
Yeah.
Well, true.
Right, yeah. Knock, 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 right?
Right.
Asterisk. Yep. But yeah, I think both nailed it on the head there, right? So in Ohio, we have had a super majority the last decade in the House, in the General Assembly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So any possible legislation that we could conceive of right now as conservatives, we could have easily passed in the last decade. We have a super majority. What do we do? Yeah, exactly. What do we do? But it's funny. It's close to a primary right now, 2 weeks out. So what are all these Republicans doing? What are they talking about that they're promising you that they're going to do?
All the things they're going to do.
Right. And they could have done that.
Exactly. It should have been done over the past decade.
And it could have been easily done. But what happened was, you know, specifically here in Ohio, last January, 22 Republicans sided with the Democrats so they could have leadership positions.
Mm.
They can't get any conservative legislation passed because guess what? If they bring it to the floor, the Democrats they made a deal with will vacate the chair, and then they won't have their leadership positions. Mm-hmm. So nothing's getting done.
So in the past decade, we could say the two largest highlights for the Conservative Party of Ohio would probably be that they willingly gave up their power for in exchange for who knows what they got in the deal. But most people don't just usually willingly give up power. I'll say that.
Yeah.
And then we have the first energy exchange mm-hmm. of millions of dollars that was a bribery scheme. So, I mean, those are two black eyes. This is like an abused spouse out here as the Republican Party.
Yeah, and I'll say this. There are good conservatives in the House right now. And, you know, even back with House Bill 6 and Larry Householder, there's always been that contingent of Republicans in the House that have been doing the right thing.
Sure.
They've just been getting bullied and silenced because they are constantly in the minority because they want to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that the problem? Is that you? Okay, it used to be politician wasn't a dirty word. Kind of like with a pastor wasn't a dirty word once upon a time.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of identify that too. It seems like there's more wolves in sheep's clothing than the other way around. But you're going into a system that rewards the wicked
mm-hmm.
and punishes the righteous.
Right.
And how do you, we're all agreeing that this needs to change. How do you fix that?
Yeah, listen, I think there's two ways, right? One, we can't stop fighting. We still got to keep trying to elect people that
we
go.
Not you, we.
Yeah, exactly. That's my second point. That's my second point right there is, right? It's the people. I mean, it is not just the politician's fault. It is us. We are the ones electing them.
Right.
Sure.
And you know, at the beginning I said, you need to be skeptical of what politicians are saying. And I hate to say it because I'm the one talking in the microphone now, and you know, I'm trying to be as sincere as possible that, you know, that what I am saying you believe, but at the same time, being on the other end of this, we need to start being skeptical. You know, the people are liable for the elected officials they are electing. So that's one of the reasons why I'm running, right, is I hope to return that. I can be one voice in Columbus, right? But this is a community issue. And I don't believe we're going to solve this problem through the government.
Right.
Again.
Right.
You know, we're all Christians in this room. Sure. You know, I believe, correct me if I'm saying this wrong, but they say politics is downstream from culture. Right.
I think that's pretty accurate, yes.
Yeah, and though we can have impacts on the culture through our policy, I believe the cultural warfare that we're seeing is really done by interpersonal relationships, right? It's the church interacting with the community. It's Christians interacting with other people that aren't of the faith. It's are we, you know, as Christians, are we showing people that our lifestyle is worth living? And I'm not saying prosperity by any means, right? I don't buy into you become a Christian, you're going to be prosperous. That is not what our faith is. It's that joy. Are you the person in that, you know, if you have an unbeliever in your life and they know you as the most grumpy person in their life.
Sure. I mean, what would make them want to be like you? Like, man, that guy looks miserable. I don't want to be that.
Being miserable is so attractive.
Yeah.
Right. And you, and again, I always go back to the founding. And it goes back to it's not about prosperity, right? You look at the founding fathers, they were really well off before the revolution. A lot of them were.
And they were willing to give it all up.
And they gave it all up for two things. One, a lot of times was their faith, but the future generations, right? Mm-hmm. And I believe we've lost that completely. And I think that is something we as Christians on the ground need to work on and have this kind of movement. I think there is a movement kind of, you know, especially in our community right now, when I'm on this campaign trail going door to door, I really do feel like there is kind of a groundswell right now of wanting someone that has
spiritual revival.
Yeah.
I've been telling Jeff that.
Well, and it's unique, right? Because I don't think they want to say it's spiritual revival, because I think there's, like you said, pastor's kind of a bad word right now. Mm-hmm. But they want the tenets of the faith is what they're mm-hmm. saying. They want integrity. They want, you know, civil dialogue back. Well, the reason why we've had that in the past is because we've been such a solid Christian nation.
Amen.
We've gone away from that, right? And again, this isn't me berating the government, berating any political party here. This is me, essentially berating Christians.
Sure. Right. Well, I think as we just discussed, the Republican Party, you got to put Christians on the hook in the same context of even knowing or willingly or not, their complacency, their lack, their want, their ability to share their faith in a way that appeals to others, to want to draw them in, to want to know what that's more about and develop that own personal relationship with God is definitely a cause of the downfall of culture. Like, I mean, we're called to be the salt of the earth, right? What have we preserved?
Yeah, and I think we all would probably agree with this, is you look at the beginning of our country again, and even, you know, before that, the intellectuals in society were the pastors.
Mm.
Universities were, I mean, I believe every single public university.
Harvard was a Christian school.
Exactly, yeah. They were all seminaries, right? So the institutions of learning had faith behind it, right? Now I look at a lot of Christians today, and you just have to go online and log on to Facebook. I'm not saying we all have to be intellectuals, but you see they disagree with someone online and they call them an idiot. You know,
right.
You know, it's all right. So I don't think that's necessarily what Jesus would do. Jesus would probably rebuke them, but in a way that would try to also lead them back to Christ.
Sure.
Right?
That's going to improve the situation rather than causing an immediate divide.
And I got to be clear on this. I'm not saying we don't fight. That's not what I'm saying. I say,
but attack the issues, not the people.
Exactly.
Yeah, let's be adults here.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's my message is, listen, as Christians, I think we've also kind of lost our way, right? Yeah. And you look at, again, I always point back to the founding. Just try to compare where we are today as a church to the founding. I mean, I believe the first battle in the revolution at Lexington and Concord was fought by the church deacons.
Mm.
Yeah,
the Black Robe Regiment.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, there was
They were wadding up hymnal paper and saying, "Give them Watts." You know, the hymnus, I believe it was Isaac Watts. They were using that to load their muskets, right? So as Christians, we can fight. And I'm not saying we back away from the fight, but at the same time, you know, we have to do this in a way that we are wanting people to join our cause too.
Aim your arrows in the right places.
Exactly.
It's like our founders, you know, maybe I'm off on this. I don't think I am, but these men did not run for office to empower themselves, but to empower the people to bring about the greatest country in the world.
Right.
And you've seen a complete flip around.
We had these people literally signed a document stating that we are willing to give
everything,
our goods, our riches, our wealth, our lives, and our sacred honor.
And this wasn't future wealth. They already were wealthy. Like, they had nothing to gain
except for the very
things they said they believed in.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have people, again, espousing promises that they don't really believe in. They just want your vote to empower themselves and ultimately enrich themselves and not the people.
How does the verse go where Jesus talks about, if you lose your life for me, you'll keep it? How's that go?
First he says, what will a man profit? What is
it? Right, yeah, if you gain the whole world but loses his own soul.
And then he's like, but anyone who wants to keep his life will lose it. Mm-hmm. And anyone who loses his life for my sake, that's the key part of that, for my sake, will gain it.
But could we not say that these people obviously wholeheartedly believed in that?
Absolutely.
No question. I think that's a great way to describe
it. No question. I think really, not to neglect this too, right? Yes, there's a lot of founding fathers that had the same faith, but there were some that didn't, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they also, the ones that didn't, they worked with the founding fathers that shared the same faith as us. And they had the same convictions, right?
Amen.
It's what I see the real decay of society is, Christians have moved away from that. And since the majority of Christians have moved away from that, people used to buy into that too, right? They saw a greater purpose. You know, they saw a greater purpose than my individual self right now.
I was just going to say, all people see today is what's in it for me or how may I benefit? And I think too, back in those times, you had healthy debates and discussions. Mm-hmm. And, there wasn't any censoring of speech. And naturally, as a result, as you just discussed earlier in the free market, the best ideas came forward. They rose to the top. And that's what won. And people realized, this is the most successful way to go.
Yeah. Maybe this isn't the best example here, right? But just thinking back, people were literally having duels with each other to protect their honor.
Right.
Their honor. Right? Look at what we have in politics right now. It's whoever can tell the biggest lie wins.
Yep. Or at least tell it the most successfully.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's good. Look how far we've come.
You're not asking people to necessarily wholeheartedly believe in your words. You're asking people to give you a chance that you may show them through your actions what you're all about. And what would you say three things are that you would hope to accomplish or maybe set forward that when you're done as a representative, maybe you move on to out of politics, maybe you even move up? What do you hope to have accomplished in this time if you get the opportunity?
Yeah, and I'll just say this. It's not even three, it's one. And that's restoring integrity back into elected office. Mm. And even if I lose, I hope it's inspired other people to step up and to stand for what is right, no matter the cost. Right? I will gladly die on my principles. I'd rather lose than sell out my faith and my principles, and I hope that inspires other people in our community, in our country, to step up and to get involved in politics. It's a dirty business. You just have to look at my race right now.
Mm.
It's terrible, but I wear a lot of the attacks on me with a badge of honor, right? Because I know I'm doing the right thing,
mm-hmm.
and that is why they're coming at me. So, if I win, I hope to really be that voice of integrity, of accountability, of transparency. But even if I lose, I hope people look at me as, wow, that man was a person of, truly someone of his word. And we haven't seen that in a long time. And that's what we need to move to. And again, maybe it's not me that wins, but if I paved the way for someone else to come through, then it was all worth it.
Excellent.
Awesome. And I think cleaning up a dirty business starts with one person at a time, right?
Absolutely.
Well, it's been wonderful having you. We really appreciate you joining us. And the best of luck to you on the rest of the campaign trail. And you've at least got my vote. And I hope that you're our representative here in the future and get the opportunity to really showcase your actions behind your words and really start to move us forward as a state and a country.
Makes me smile about the future.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yep. As always, this has been Blindly Obvious. If we can see it, you can see it too. You can visit our website at www.blindlyobvious.com, where you can catch up on past episodes, as well as learn a little bit about us. We are so happy that you're here and hope these are just the conversations you've been looking for. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and share the word. Peace, love, and God bless. And remember, the eyes mean nothing if the mind is blind.
It's Blindly Obvious, baby.